श्लोके So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, canto number 3, chapter 13, entitled The Appearance of Lord Varaha, text number 26. Tesham satam veda vitana murtir Brahma Bhadharyatva Gunanubadam Vinadya Bhuyo Vibuddho Dayaya Gajendra Lilo Jalam Avivesha Tesham of them, satam of the great devotees, Veda, all knowledge, Vitana Murtihi, the form of expansion, Brahma, Vedic sound, Avadharya, knowing it well, Atma, of himself, Guna Anuvadam, transcendental glorification, Vinadya, resounding, Bhuyaha, again, Vibuddha, of the transcendentally learned, Udayaya, for the elevation or benefit, Gajendralilaha, playing like an elephant, Jalam, the water, Avivesha, entered. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Playing like an elephant, he entered into the water after roaring again in reply to the Vedic prayers by the great devotees. The Lord is the object of the Vedic prayers. And thus he understood that the devotees' prayers were meant for him. Kindly repeat after me. Playing like an elephant, he entered into the water after roaring again. In reply to the Vedic prayers by the great devotees, the Lord is the object of the Vedic prayers, and thus he understood that the devotees' prayers were meant for him. Purport. The form of the Lord in any shape is always transcendental and full of knowledge and mercy. The Lord is the destroyer of all material contamination, because his form is personified Vedic knowledge. All the Vedas worship the transcendental form of the Lord. In the Vedic mantras, the devotees request the Lord to remove the glaring effulgence because it covers his real face. That is the version of the Ishopanishad. The Lord has no material form, but his form is always understood in terms of the Vedas. The Vedas are said to be the breath of the Lord, and that breath was inhaled by Brahma, the original student of the Vedas. The breathing from the nostril of Brahma caused the appearance of Lord Boar, and therefore the Boar incarnation of the Lord is the personified Vedas. The glorification of the incarnation by the sages on the higher planets consisted of factual Vedic hymns. Whenever there is glorification of the Lord, it is to be understood that Vedic mantras are being rightly vibrated. The Lord was therefore pleased when such Vedic mantras were chanted, and to encourage his pure devotees, he roared once more and entered the water to rescue the submerged earth. So it is our great fortune and great pleasure to get this opportunity to speak a little bit on this verse from the Bhagavatam. It is actually the great fortune for all of us that Srila Prabhupada has established this wonderful system of hearing. Here in the purport, Srila Prabhupada makes reference quite a few times to the Vedic knowledge or the Vedas. Vedas, actually, because there was reference to the Ishopanishad, I started looking up a little bit yesterday before I could get very far in the text of the Upanishad. There's that whole very historical introduction. Srila Prabhupada gives a lecture in London on the topic of the Vedas. And our whole existence and all of our knowledge, of course, is originating, comes from the Vedic literatures, which is, as mentioned here by Srila Prabhupada, originally given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, to Lord Brahma, whom Srila Prabhupada mentions is the first student. The Vedas are huge compilation of knowledge, much of which, according to the Goswamis of Vrindavan, has been lost, especially during the various events that have taken place in Kali Yuga. And we find ourselves today with something like 7% or less than 10% of the original Vedic literatures. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has nicely established that in his what is called the Dasamula Tattva, the first tattva, the basis of all tattva is actually the Vedas. Unless something is substantiated from the Vedic literatures, it cannot be accepted. And that's why it is so important that we base all of our activities and all of our knowledge connected with the Vedas. And of course, as it is nicely mentioned here, whenever, just like the sages in higher planetary systems are chanting hymns, which are coming directly from the Vedas, and that is directly glorifying the Supreme Lord. It means whenever we perform activities or speak on the strength of the Vedas, that we are actually coming directly in contact with the Lord. And we are actually pleasing the Lord as the Lord is being pleased here. The Vedas are actually very confidential. There are very confidential sections of the Vedas. It is of utmost importance for us to understand the various levels which are presented in the Vedas. Of course, as practicing Vaishnavas, as aspiring Vaishnavas, following in the line of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as ordered by Lord Chaitanya to the six Goswamis of Vrindavan also, we especially give importance and emphasis on the bhakti element. Of course, we know also that the essence of the Vedic literatures, the essence of the Bhagavad Gita, is the science of bhakti, or the science of devotional service. Coming back to that introduction that Prabhupada was given in London, Prabhupada actually begins his whole explanation of the Vedas by pointing out to his audience that actually we're not Hindus. We are following Varnashrama. We are following the system of Varnashrama. And then Srila Prabhupada goes into a whole discussion in detail. We often refer or speak of Sanatan Dharma. I'd like to just pull in a few very important aspects which are connected actually with the whole theme of Vedic knowledge. Vedic knowledge, as Prabhupada explains and as we can understand from our Vedic literatures themselves, are perfect. Not only perfect, but they are complete in themselves. And that is why we speak of Sanatan Dharma. Sanatan Dharma needs to be understood, however, just like we understand the Supreme Absolute Truth and Lord Chaitanya in five features. Different tattvas are explained and within the Pancha Tattva, Vishnu Tattva, Shakti Tattva, Jiva Tattva. Similarly, which is sometimes we don't think about it, I would say, sufficiently, there are two essential features within the concept of Sanatan Dharma. And this is very, very important to understand. The foremost and let's say the first level or feature of Sanatan Dharma, both of these are actually explained in different sections of the Vedas. We know that the Vedas are divided primarily into what is called Shruti and Smriti. Shruti being what is directly spoken and given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead without any change. Whereas Smriti is what is revealed by self-realized souls and is not directly necessarily the direct words spoken by the Lord, but it is by self-realized souls, and therefore both Shruti and Smriti, we follow. We follow both of them. So, within the context of Sanatan Dharma and our line, our Gaudiya line, we have from the time of Lord Chaitanya going down through our various acharyas up to Srila Prabhupada, a lot of the emphasis has been and continues to be on the what we could say Bhagavat Dharma aspect of Sanatan Dharma, means what is directly related to the jiva, spirit soul. As we heard a few days ago, and as is very common instruction given by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Jivera Swarupa Hoy Krishna Nityadas. So the Swarup or identity of the Jiva, spirit soul, is to be engaged eternally in bhakti, devotional service. So that is clear actually. What is possibly less clear, and that's why I'm bringing this up in connection with the whole aspect of Vedas, because Vedas, if we, there's a danger. That danger actually was exemplified in the whole Leela between Srila Vyasadeva and Narada Muni. Srila Vyasadeva, we can remember, had not sufficiently described the glories directly of Lord Krishna. Therefore, Narada Muni came and underlined this. Of course, Srila Vyasadeva, being such an elevated personality, could sense that also, even before Narada Muni instructed him. So this is one feature, very obviously essential feature. The Bhagavad Dharma, our eternal duty, responsibility, identity as spirit soul. As important is the other feature for those of us, means all of us actually, who have come in this material world and have become conditioned by the modes of material nature. There is an eternal feature not only within Bhagavad Dharma, but there's an eternal feature aspect within what is called Varnashrama Dharma. Means in the same way that Bhagavad Dharma is a science, Srila Prabhupada has translated, the complete science of Bhakti Yoga, isn't it? That is a complete science, which we cannot, if we are not knowing about Bhakti or devotional service, we are what we call materialistic or karmis or in Maya, and therefore we suffer. So in the same way that we have to come to understand about Bhagavad Dharma, the eternal features or the scientific aspect of Varnashrama Dharma also cannot be put aside or neglected, you see. In the Bhagavatam, it mentions that one devotee recently had brought up this, pointed this out, that actually we can, in one way we cannot say that Varnashrama Dharma is eternal. Because in Satyayuga, Prabhupada writes, there is no Varnashrama Dharma. However, Srila Prabhupada points out that in Kali Yuga, in Satyayuga, everyone is a Brahmana. Everyone is self-realized. So there's no need of this elaborate system. However, the principles of Varnashrama Dharma, the essence in terms of gradually elevating oneself, at least to the mode of goodness, and then of course beyond, is also there. What is very interesting also, and important for us to know as practitioners of devotional service and bhakti, is that one of the foremost authorities on the science of devotional service is who? Narada Muni. Narada Muni not only happens to be a foremost authority on the science of bhakti, but he is also the foremost authority on the science of Varnashrama Dharma. And it is very important for us to understand these two levels and to avoid neglecting either of them. Of course, as devotees, primarily we identify or we have less difficulty, although practicing devotional service is not so easy in itself also. I would just like to bring out something which is in connection with this whole discussion, generally less, I would say, known within our ISKCON society. Oh, Maharaj is going to bring out something that's not known in our ISKCON society. we all, as we read Prabhupada's books and as we practice devotional service, naturally come in contact with various aspects of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, and naturally we gain, that is part of the whole process, different realizations, isn't it? Although when we mentioned a little earlier that the whole basis of the Vedas, everything begins or is has to be connected with the Vedas. I remember many years ago when Srila Prabhupada, I happened to be in Montreal, we had come from Ottawa. Srila Prabhupada came, that was in 1975. And those were the years, I mean, at that particular time, Srila Prabhupada, along with various devotees, they were, Srila Prabhupada was translating the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam, which deals with the structure of the universe, very complex, very difficult actually to understand. Srila Prabhupada had mentioned at that particular time that when this fifth canto will be published, many of my devotees will leave because some of the statements are just too far out, you know, to difficult to accept. I happened to be, you know, like all the devotees who were in Montreal, most of the devotees, we were eager to just be close to Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada was staying in one small apartment, Nandikeshwar Prabhu's apartment, close to the temple in Montreal. And he was inside one small room having discussions with, you know, many of the senior disciples. So I was brahmachari at that time. But everybody was pulling their ears, you know, to try and hear and listen what was being said. At one particular time, there was, I've never heard it on a tape, but I mean, I heard it directly. some questions were being asked to Srila Prabhupada. At one particular time, I found that very interesting. Prabhupada mentioned this particular point, I forget the actual point, that I'm explaining to you is based on realization. Very important here. It's based on my own realization. So, of course, we have to be cautious about realizations, and they must, you know, they must also equate, or they must also be supported by Shastra, Sadhu, Guru, and Shastra. The important point I'm wanting to make in connection with the whole question of Dharma, Srila Prabhupada, way back in 1949, that means, you know, many, many years before coming to the West, before traveling to the West, had written two important texts. One of them was actually a letter to someone who was like deputy minister here in India, practically prime minister. And the essence of that letter was actually reproduced in the essay on Gita Nagari. If I can get this small message across, I'm sure some of you are familiar with it, but I think it is so important, and it needs to be studied, I would say, more deeply. The essence of the message in that letter, which was again repeated, anyone can read it, the essay on Gita Nagari is in the folio, Srila Prabhupada's folio, and so is that letter actually of 1949. Srila Prabhupada, actually, not only in that letter of 1949, not only in the essay on Gita Nagari, but also if we observe how Srila Prabhupada introduced Krishna consciousness within the society, those same four basic, we could say, divisions, actually Srila Prabhupada calls them movements. Prabhupada refers to four movements. Part of the larger Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya. And it's a little confusing in one sense because the first movement he refers to as Sankirtan. In the context that he is writing, Srila Prabhupada refers to what he actually did when he went to New York. Sankirtan in this context means the holy name, the beginning. Just like Lord Chaitanya introduced the Sankirtan movement. How? by going with mridangas called kartal in the streets of Navadvip and introducing, actually even before that, in the house of Srivast Thakur, for 1 year was chanting the holy name. Then he brought it out. And it's been being brought out, especially by Srila Prabhupada all over the world since then. So the first movement that is referred to by Srila Prabhupada, and if we follow these four movements or four divisions, we will observe how such a natural sequence is there. Such logical sequence is there. And if we miss out on any of these sequences or leave any of them out, then we're losers. It's not complete. You know, if somebody tells you there are four steps before you arrive at your destination, well, if you take only three, you're not going to arrive at your destination, isn't it? Or if you get stuck on one of them, then you're not going to reach the destination. So the first division Prabhupada explained was introducing the holy name, which would broaden, which would expand into the larger mridanga. The holy name is, you know, with colon kartal. Srila Prabhupada, yeah, like the Goswamis of Vrindavan also, expanded that to what is called the brihat mridanga. You know, books, book distribution. In the beginning, those who are Prabhupada disciples from the very beginning who are here will understand that there were no books practically, just magazines. And I mean, you spend 8 hours or 10 hours chanting the holy name all every day practically, which was very nice. So the first movement or division introduced by Srila Prabhupada and spoken of way back in 1949 is what he coined as Sankirtan movement, referring to the holy name in the books. The second one, actually, all of this is also referred to, Prabhupada makes the connection with Gandhi. I won't get into that so much. If you read those references, you can understand. The second one was what is called temple worship movement. Once you have, you attract people by chanting the holy name, you have to go somewhere. You need a place. So, temples. And Srila Prabhupada demonstrated this especially when he came back to India by establishing, this is one of the major and initial or first temples, Sridhar Mayapur, Mayapur Chandradari Mandir, and then Vrindavan, Krishna Balaram Mandir, and then Bombay. And then of course, you know, this continues. This is the second movement, which is very important to give association for devotees, to worship the Lord, etc. The third movement Srila Prabhupada speaks of, and which he also introduced, is what is called the spiritual initiation movement. Spiritual initiation refers to congregational preaching, whereby people are attracted to the holy name, they come to the temple, and they become more serious. And then the idea is to encourage them to become connected in Guru Parampara. They become initiated, more committed, they take vows, they sit in a fire jagya. That is the third movement. Srila Prabhupada spoke of the fourth movement and also introduced it within our society, but is less understood. The fourth movement, Srila Prabhupada referred to it as the classless society movement. Classless society. Actually, Prabhupada speaks of a classless society referring to Varnasram. It is a very bold statement to make that Varnasram is a classless society movement. You see. What does Srila Prabhupada mean? It means that actually when we practice bhakti or devotional service and put Krishna in the center of our activities, we're all the same. We're all devotees, aspiring Vaishnavas. So it is classless in that sense. But not that we do away with the four varnas and the four ashramas. So Srila Prabhupada, we all know, very much wanted that understanding that this is very much dharma. based on principles given directly by the Supreme Lord Himself. So in other words, it is very important for all of us, whether we are just, you know, rank and file, as we say, rank and file devotees, or especially those who are leaders within our society, need to understand these four divisions or four main movements, so to speak, which, if they are properly understood and properly applied, can actually bring in and give an opportunity for everyone in the whole world actually to become engaged. And that is actually the purpose of the mission. The Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is meant, as we know, according to the predictions which are given in the Shastras, to introduce or bring in a golden period, Satya Yuga, for 10,000 years. And these two features will be there, Bhagavad Dharma and Varnashrama Dharma. How we go about doing it, actually, that is the responsibility that has been given to us by Srila Prabhupada, following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas also. And this is, just like here, the sages, they are vibrating Vedic hymns. Whenever we, again, speak in relation to what is in the Shastra, there's one very nice quote. I'll just finish on this quote, spoken by Narada Muni, connected also with the whole theme of the Vedic knowledge and also Dharma, the principles of Dharma. Narada Muni, in the 7th canto of the Bhagavatam, chapter 11, where he speaks about the four social divisions, varnas. Very interesting. He begins also the varnas. Then after he goes into the asram. That's why Prabhupada says, first is varna, then is asram. There's a reason. It's a very scientific reason why it is like this. So Narada Muni, he mentions, dharma mulam hi bhagavan, sarva shastra muyo harihi, smritam cha tadvidam rajan, yenatma yena chatma prasidati. Dharma mulam hi bhagavan. That the root of dharma is actually bhagavan, rendering service to the Supreme Lord. Sarva shastra mayo harihi means the essence of all the Vedic knowledge, means the essence of both Shruti and Smriti, means the essence of Bhagavad Dharma, and the essence of Varnashrama Dharma is also the same. Hari means Krishna. That is why we speak of Daivi Varnashrama Dharma. Smritam cha tabidam rajan. This is those who know, those who are knowledge, they are constantly remembering and explaining about these principles which are found in the Shastras. And if that is done, then yena chatma prasidati. Very interesting how Prabhupada translates this atma. We know atma means the soul, but actually atma means more than the soul, means the body, the mind. Body, mind and soul. And in that translation, Prabhupada ends by saying body, mind, soul, or you know, material, mental, like, and then he adds, and everything. Means everything will be satisfied when we understand the principles of Dharma and are successful in applying them. So this is a very great responsibility, very great order that has been handed down to all of us. We have a tremendous responsibility as members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And it is especially the duties of those who are, let's say, especially able to give time, like in the Varnashrama system, means those more brahminically inclined to actually deeply study the various, you know, that is why Lord Chaitanya sent the Goswamis to Vrindavan, so that they could scrutinizingly study and extract from the Vedic literatures what is the essence. So our point, and we'll finish on this here, is that actually there are two essences. Is that the essence is both in terms of understanding our position as eternal servants of Krishna, Bhagavad Dharma principles, and also in our conditioned state, understanding that there's a means by which to get there, ideal perfect system, which is given by Krishna, which is Varnashrama Dharma, and it is our duty and responsibility to actually deeply understand and come to the point of one day applying it on a very large scale all over the world. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any, we have a few, maybe a few questions, a few minutes if there's any questions. Yes. Movements, divisions, classless society. Yes.
You explain the fourth movement as the classless movement, but Varnashram has classes.
Yes.
So can you, it seems to be a discrepancy. Can you explain, please?
We mentioned briefly, I'll just repeat, that's why I was mentioning that it is a very bold statement. Prabhupada is using the word classless society, specifically referring to Varnashrama. Why? Because when we understand about Daivi Varnashrama, Daivi means divine, spiritual Varnashrama, based on bhakti. So Krishna is the center. So whether I'm a Brahmana or a sannyasi or Vaishya, whatever Varna I may be in, or whatever Ashram, we are all servants of Krishna. So in that sense, on the spiritual sense, it is a classless society. Not that we do away with the different positions, material positions. Because, you know, perfection of life is not to become a Brahmana. Perfection of life is not to become a sannyasi. But those positions, those social positions and those spiritual divisions are there, and they are the ideal system given by Krishna whereby we can actually come to the transcendental platform. So it is classless, and it's not my term. Prabhupada is using the term. Prabhupada is, you know, that is there in the essay on Gita Nagari. Yes.
Hare Krishna. This is a very important point because they are mentioned that Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati was a sannyasi in Varnashrama Dharma. But he gave initiation of 14 disciples, Babaji, yes. He gave 14 Babaji initiation. So he was criticized by the smart Brahmas. The point is that, as you very well mentioned, that Vaishnava is beyond all this conception, but for a movement, preaching movement, we need to regulate according to Varnashrama Dharma. Yeah. The reason is that inside himself, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati was a Paramahansa. So, not matter we are the Varna we belong, but our goal is to become pure devotees. And it is beyond the classification of Varnashrama Dharma.
Any other? One more question here.
Thank you for your class, Maharaj. I was wondering what are your thoughts. We've made attempts in North America to establish self-sufficient Varnashram farming communities. I was wondering what you thought have been our greatest obstacles in helping these communities to flourish and prosper, and how do you think we can best overcome the obstacles that we've faced?
Most of our obstacles, major portion of our obstacles, are on the level of, I think it's obvious, you know, sambandha relationships. Unless we are able to, it's just like, you know, we cannot understand or appreciate anything beyond the level of nista, you know, like ruchi and asakti and bhava and prema, unless we go through the right, you know, beginning levels, of association and coming to the level of being really fixed up as devotees. Nista means situated in the mode of goodness, following strictly the principles like this, which only, you know, this basic foundation is what can enable us to establish proper relationships. And then if the sambandha, we have it's a great challenge, tremendous challenge within our society, because we're dealing with so many different levels of relationships. Especially we have like many, you know, we have what we call shiksha gurus, diksha gurus, and a lot of controversies and misunderstandings, and, you know, Vaishnava etiquette are often maybe not known, followed. So relationship is actually the key to opening up and succeeding in any activity. If our sambandha understanding is more deeply known, realized, understood, applied, followed, then our activities will naturally go on nicely. So I think that's the maybe other aspects, but in my estimation, this and you know, it's part of our philosophy. It's just like the basis of our philosophy also, sambandha. And as a matter of fact, we mentioned earlier in the class, and I'll finish on this point also, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his Dasamula Tattva, after establishing the Vedas as the basis, you know, everything has to be connected with the Vedas, then he mentions that actually the seven following principles are in connection with sambandha. You see. And then the ninth is in connection with abhideya, and then the tenth is prayojana. So it's like, you know, our Acharya Bhaktivinoda Thakur is giving so much of importance to sambandha, different levels of relationships. I think we'll stop here.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai Gaura Premanandi.